brief remarks, I would like to add this. That one of the values of these type of testimonies is that we in government learn an awful lot. And I've been very impressed today by the other people that have spoke before this committee. And the one thing that I really picked up on was that it has to be a holistic approach towards homelessness. If you have a spoke with a wheel and you have a section of employment there, if that gets taken out, the wheel is going to break. And the same is true with the other programming. And I think we have to take a strong look at this as we go around with other programs and other targeting with our veterans population. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman, if anyone has any questions.
Any questions for Gary?
Yeah, Jim, do you, you know, using your analogy of the wheel, do you see or have a recommendation or any ideas on who should coordinate all those spokes?
Well, I certainly think in New York State that should be the Division of Veterans Affairs. I mean, that's the logical choice. They're mandated by legislation to do that, and I support that. And I think there has to be more cooperation amongst other agencies and more interlinking, if you will, of services and the providers.
The second question I have, and I'd like to piggyback on the issue of the drawdown. Do you see the usage of the facilities that are being closed from an employment standpoint or employment training standpoint, as well as housing and medical treatment?
I'm sorry, Gary, could you repeat that question?
Taking one of the installations, Plattsburgh Air Force Base, as an example, do you foresee the possibility of coordinating the homeless program where you could use it for housing and medical, as well as a training facility for employment?
I certainly would see that as an opportunity. Exactly how that is running, I really have to defer to someone else in the state, because I think that property is being sold out there.
Well, I'm just using Plattsburgh as an example.
Sold or running.
Sold or running. But it certainly would make sense to use it for that type of program, as well as other programs.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
See you at the next meeting.
Okay.
We now have the director of the Copeland House in Niagara Falls, New York, Ms. Sharon McGraw. Please. Oh, there you are.
Hey.
Welcome, young lady.
Yeah,
thank you. Yeah, next. We're going to do him next.
Oh. Why don't we do them together?
Are they both?
Nice to meet you.
Hi.
Nice to meet you.
Hi. My pleasure.
Mr. DeMarco. Please.
Mr. Robert Hickey? Is Mr. Robert Hickey here? Oh, there you are. Would you like to sit next to the young lady?
Sure. Mr. Hickey, how are you? I hope you have this in front of you.
Yes.
Okay. You can start on the back, third page from the back. The big deal is money, okay? It's nothing more than money. Copeland House has been in operation for 11 years. We're cost-effective, we know what we're doing, and we do it for $54 a day. Now, we have a government contract to treat homeless veterans and veterans who have post-traumatic stress disorder and a multitude of other problems. Why can they only afford to send 6 veterans a month when the house holds 17? Tell me. The gentleman here that came up and spoke to veterans from the Saratoga Restoration Project, we're right on the money. Number one, we work with combat veterans. I'm not sure I agree with the VA when they say chronically mentally ill. I just returned from the Virgin Islands, where they had multitude of hurricanes, and they have for the past 6 or 7 years. Are we going to call those traumatized people mentally ill? I don't buy it. Combat veterans are far from mentally ill. They have been severely traumatized, as any homeless person has. They need help, they need understanding, and yes, in many cases, they need rehabilitation. Alcoholism, if you're using the medical model, is a disease, much like cancer. People say, well, they don't have willpower. Alcoholism has nothing to do with willpower. It needs treatment. It is treatable. Post-traumatic stress, in the Diagnostic Psychiatric Manual, DSM-IV-R, is classified under an anxiety disorder. that does not mean it's a mental illness. So maybe if we would stop beating these people down by calling them chronically mentally ill, or by saying XYZ about them, instead of stopping, finding out what the problem is and working with the problem. Because the first problem is not homelessness. These people, as one gentleman came up here said, they move around a lot and they hide. Well, that's what survivors do. Survivors move and they hide. That's how they survived. Okay? You take any of us today and put us out in the street for a week. Let's see who survives and who doesn't. That's the bottom line. They are human beings. Somewhere there has been trauma. So first of all, they have to be safe. Because if they're not safe, you're not going to do a damn thing for them. Get them safe. Get them treatment. It works. Again, we have a house full of professionals with 17 residents and 300 outpatients. Why does this little place in Niagara Falls work for 11 years? And I come from the VA system. Okay, I'm a former government nurse. I didn't like their system, and I'm still not sure I like it. Again, let's watch what we call people that served our country. Chronically mentally ill? No way. Any questions?
Comment. I like what you say.
I have one question. What would you like this committee to do?
I would like this committee, number one, to actually see how we do it on the budget we do it on, that we've done it for 11 years. It's doable. It really is. And I agree with Mr. Hartman. You need a holistic continuum of care. You're looking at an average age now, not 42. You're looking at, say, 44. Okay, if you're looking at the Vietnam, you're looking at Korea and World War II, you're looking at a lot older. Now we have to look at Desert Storm. Again, I'm looking at combat people, of which there are abundance. We're looking at a lot of physical problems. We're looking at exposure to toxins in the case of Vietnam. We're looking at different kind of exposures if you're talking about the Gulf. And for anyone to tell us they weren't there, they're quite frankly full of you-know-what. We all know what these men were exposed to, and women. So let's stop with the politics. Let's get down to the nitty-gritty, and let's help them. Because, again, it's doable. So come and see how we do it, because we do it.
You're right on. You know, one of the things about a veteran is that we train him to move and hide, to survive in warfare fire. So
that's right.
Do the same thing.
That's exactly right. And any survivor of any trauma will do essentially the same thing. If you look at the disease of alcoholism, if you have an adult child, okay, who comes from a family where there's alcoholism, you talk to that adult. They will tell you what they did as a kid. Because human beings, if they can't find a safe place, they will act out. You just have to go right back and do a real thorough screening, and you will always find it. Don't look so much at the symptoms. Look what's underneath. Any other questions?
Good. Thank you, Bea. Thank you. Mr. Rob W. Hickey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and the other members of the panel for inviting me here to speak. My name is Bob Hickey. I'm the Executive Director of Veterans Outreach Center in Rochester, New York. I'm also a veteran of the U.S. Army. I was a platoon leader in Vietnam with the 1st Infantry Division in 1969. So I know a little bit of what I speak. The Veterans Outreach Center was one of 17 centers established in 1973 by the Community Services Administration through the National League of Cities U.S. Conference of Mayors. Today, the Veterans Outreach Center in Rochester is the only one of those 17 that is still in existence. Obviously, there's other agencies similar to ours that have sprouted up over the country and are doing the same type of work and quality work. It was founded by and for Vietnam veterans, but today we serve veterans of all eras. And I think it's ironic that as we speak today, we're preparing a whole nother generation of veterans that are going to be serving and are serving in Bosnia that are going to need our services. When we were founded those 23 years ago, the people who founded it thought that we could solve the problem that the Vietnam veteran was experiencing in maybe 5, maybe 6 years and then close our doors. Unfortunately, that hasn't been the case. In those early days, 23 years ago, we were on the leading edge of veterans' issues, from Agent Orange to post-traumatic stress disorder. Since that time, we've expanded and adjusted our services to address the contemporary needs of the veteran population. And today, one of those needs is the homeless population, especially the homeless veteran. In our agency, we get at least one phone call a day and usually 2 to 3 walk-ins a week of people coming in looking for some type of assistance, finding affordable, temporary, or emergency shelter. As I said earlier, we are primarily a mental health counseling agency dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder. Our counselors are all veterans, all master's level veterans, and they have been providing, we think, cutting-edge counseling services dealing with PTSD for many years now. I want to veer from the rest of my comments, which are written up here, to talk about a couple issues that were brought up today where we have some experience. One of the early speakers was questioned about the number of homeless people. And while we've all been exposed to any number of surveys and documents that put that count anywhere from 300 to 3 million homeless around the country, in the city of Rochester, the Center for Governmental Research, through joint funding by the county and the city, just completed, I think it was approximately a 6-month study on the homeless population in Rochester. The same agency did a study back in 1988. In that study, we noticed that they did not identify the veterans. It wasn't in the questionnaire. None of the people conducting the survey were asking that question. We had a grant in 1993 to do some work on that issue. It was a relatively small grant, but the survey clearly indicated that none of the shelter providers in Monroe County were screening residents or asking them if they were in fact veterans, so it was difficult to get a count. We insisted that we be part of this study, and we participated in the formation of the questionnaire and made sure that the people surveyed as well as the care providers were questioned about if it was an individual, are you a veteran, and with the care providers that they made it their policy to question people that were coming through the door to find out their veteran status. The results of that study were just released. It was either early this, well, it couldn't have been yesterday. It was late last week. And they concluded that in the past year, there were approximately 6,000 homeless persons in Rochester and in Monroe County. On any given day, there were anywhere between 385 to 400 homeless people. Their records or their results indicate that of that count, about 13 to 14% were veterans. Now, this is much, much lower. In fact, it's about half what the national average is estimated to be. But we feel, because of the way this study was conducted, that these numbers are pretty good. They surveyed every emergency and temporary shelter provider in the area, and on 2 different days within a year, one in the summertime and one in the wintertime, amassed a lot of volunteers and survey takers and took a snapshot of the homeless people in the city. What they did not take into account is the homeless population in rural areas, which we feel is a significant number, but the funding understandably wasn't there for that. And in Rochester, we're fortunate enough that the 385 to 420, I think, was the number, are pretty much all in shelters, again, on any given night. They were never able to find any more than 5 or 10 people that were actually out on the streets, sleeping under the bridges or wherever. That's not to say that these people weren't there. That's their best judgment of their survey. Even if that number is half of what the national estimate it turns out to be, that's still more homeless veterans than any community should be faced with and should have to provide services for. And I think that that all agencies, both in the private sector and in the governmental sector, have got to take a look at this. And the point's been made by previous speakers here that I don't think veterans want any special treatment, but we certainly want the treatment that we deserve. And I think it borders on criminal that there are that many veterans in these times that are living on the streets. One other point I'd like to talk about is someone spoke previously of some money that HUD had awarded in their innovative homeless program. This past year, HUD awarded in two grants approximately $950,000. Under this innovative homeless program. The first round of grants of $40,000, no money went to veteran-specific agencies. The second round of $900 million, $7.5 million, less than 1%, went to veteran-specific agencies. The reason given is that somebody at HUD was concerned that a veteran-specific agency might in fact discriminate against non-veteran homeless people. I can speak for our agency, that certainly is not the case. If someone comes to us who is not a veteran, we make every effort possible to connect them with some other agency or an agency that will provide their needs. There's absolutely no discrimination whatsoever. But because our funding is critical, as everybody else's is in the private sector, we limit our mental health counseling service to veterans or members of veteran or family members of veterans. And I want to point out about and many of you are probably aware of this, but this HUD granting so little money to veteran-specific agencies was in direct opposition to a sense of Congress language adopted, I believe, in 1994 that said, and I quote, a share of such grants must more closely approximating the proportion of the population of homeless individuals who are veterans should be provided to community organizations that provide assistance to homeless veterans. And I think it's clear from the percentage of that funding that HUD did not abide by that sense of Congress. And finally, in our instance, we are not, nor have we ever been a governmental or funded by the government, either by the federal government or New York State. We do enjoy some money from the state through the local delegation through the legislative initiative program. But we don't receive any funds directly for the services that we provide. Recently, in efforts to get some monies for some outreach work to deal with the homeless population, we have been successful in getting some funding through a private organization in New York City, private funding foundation. And we hope that the results of those outreach efforts and that study will put us in a position to approach both the government and other private foundations for more money to provide more services and eventually some housing. And that's all I have. I want to thank you again. Be glad to answer any questions if anybody has any.
On behalf of the committee, let me say thank you and give my regards to Anthony Ferrarese, please.
I sure will. He said to do the same to you.
I'm going to declare a half-hour break. I think some of us need it. Just a half hour. I promise you, 30 minutes and we'll be back. And if you know me, I keep my word. In 30 minutes, we'll be back.
I introduce you, Rick, because we're out of the room. You know that. You don't get two introductions from me. One is enough.
To talk about, I had a laundry list of things, but in listening to some of the other presentations, a lot of what is needed has been covered, but there's one thing that I would like to speak about, and just to give you a little bit of background, I promise to be quick. I'm a Vietnam vet, combat. I lost my right leg in Vietnam, And the only reason I mention that is I think it's pertinent to the discussion how the veteran sees the Department of Veterans Affairs, or the VA as most of us call it. Now, when I was medevac back to the States, I did most of my recovery in Valley Forge Army General Hospital in Pennsylvania. And towards the end of the stay in the hospital, I had actually reached the end of my service. I was a draftee. And at that point, in order to stay in the Army hospital, I had to re-enlist, granted just for the duration of the time of my hospital stay. However, if I didn't re-enlist, I would be sent to a VA hospital. The VA hospital I would have been sent to at that point in the world would have been Kingsbridge. Mm-hmm. And if those of you remember the late 60s, it's been depicted in movies and books, Kingsbridge VA was an awful place. I, as a draftee, actually re-enlisted in the Army to stay out of the VA system, okay? Time went by, and obviously because of my injuries, I had to deal with the VA, but I did so as little as possible. Until I guess around 1980, where I saw at one point in the world that there was a grant for people like myself to adapt their bathrooms, etc., to put bars in and make it more convenient for them to get around. So I had sent in the application and I waited a long period of time. The application came back and stated that I would have to go for a physical to verify the fact I was still handicapped. Okay, now granted, if it were a indiscreet back injury, we might be able to say okay. But I did. I figured, knowing the military, I'll do what I'm supposed to do. So I went to the VA hospital at Montrose, sat there with a neurologist, an orthopedist, and some other fellow. And they said, yes, in fact, you are still missing your leg. I said, well, good. I thought I was losing my marbles for a minute. And you would agree that standing on one leg taking a shower is not the smartest thing. They said, yeah. I said, okay, could you translate that to the regional office, which at that time was on 7th Avenue? And they did. And shortly thereafter, I got a letter back rejecting. And I said, why? Actually, I said a few other things, but chief among them was why. And I sent a letter back to the regional office. How come I was turned down for this grant? And they sent me chapter and verse. And at that time, I was not in the business I'm in now. Might have been the reason I'd gotten into this. And according to regs, in order to apply for this grant, I had to be precluded from locomotion without the aid of crutches, canes, braces, walkers, wheelchairs, went on to name a dozen things or more. Nowhere in there did it say prostheses. Nowhere in there did it say artificial limb. And since I was completely forthright and told them that I didn't need such hardware, thankfully, I was turned down. Well, I was outraged at that point, and I wanted to go and find whoever had written me this letter. And not to take issue with Sharon from Copenhagen, but I think most of us combat vets are crazy. At any rate, on my way up in the old 7th Avenue headquarters, I stopped in prosthetics, which at that time was on the 6th floor, and saw a Dr. Rubin, who, if any of you have dealt with the VA in those days, a very kind old world doctor who'd been around forever. And I explained my situation to him, and he said, psst. I said, what's psst? He took his prescription pad, scribbled something on it, threw it across the desk at me. And I said, what's that? He said, that's an elastic ankle support. I said, I need that. He said, couldn't hurt. I said, so? He said, now you have a brace that was prescribed by the VA. Okay? I'm going to pick on the VA a lot here, but I'm also going to support them very heavily. But I think there's a pattern with the VA that intimidates veterans, and they stay away from them. Up until recently, if a fellow showed up at a VA hospital, homeless, with a plastic bag with deposit cans in it, looking disheveled, not having had a bath or anything else in weeks, the first thing he would have been given would be a 90-question means test, asking about his last year's tax returns, the property he owns, etc. It gets silly. We now have gone to 800 numbers in the VA. They're supposedly saving us money. I'm the director of a county agency. I can't get departments of the Department of Veterans Affairs because of the 800 numbers. It's a case of you get the recorded either menu or the announcement that your call is being ignored in the order in which it came in. And it gets to the point where we're writing letters to get by it. Having picked on the VA enough, I think, I'm trying to make a point. The VA has done some very good work. It is doing some very good work and is still doing better work today. But getting through the front door of a VA hospital or VA facility for a reasonably normal, sane person who's had a good meal and everything else is difficult. I think John will bear me out. If you get someone who walks into your office and says, listen, I've been drinking for 20 years, but I want to change my ways. I haven't had a drink in 5-6 days. Can you get me into a program? No, I can't. I can take you down to the local gin mill, fill you with $10 worth of cheap whiskey, then get you into a program because then you're active. Okay? What I'm saying is I think we need to bring it back to the neighborhood. Those of us who have that ability, who have the brain cells left and can do it, should do it for those who can't. The VA is too big a bureaucracy to turn around now, even if it wants to. There are just layers upon layers. I heard the question asked before, how many veterans are there out there, and do you have forms that identify veterans? And the answer came back, no, a lot of that is because of us. And when I say us, it's the Vietnam veterans, because coming back from Vietnam, we were not the most popular people in the world. And if someone was interviewing us and said, are you a veteran? The usual answer is, who wants to know? What's this about? And we lobbied people to get that damn question off the forms because we were, or at least felt we were, being discriminated against. The other thing is if you go to a county agency for support, SSI, whatever, the first question they're going to ask you, or one of the first questions, is are you a veteran? If you say yes to that question, they're going to say, well, go to the VA. Because the Mother Earth for all veterans is the VA will take care of all your needs. Or at least go to the VA and get me a letter that says you're not entitled to any benefits. I can't write that letter truthfully unless I try and get this person veterans benefits. But even if he qualifies for a pension, we're talking 6 months before the first dollar comes over the door, minimally. So what I'm thinking is if we can develop smaller facilities outside of the VA, I'm from Rockland County, we're outside of the city, there are houses all over the place. You think the name of the place was Century 21, there are so many signs up. Any and all of these houses can be had. I think we can get local businesses to back us. I think we can get benefits for these people if we can get them in. And I think we can even, God forbid, show a profit doing this. The thing is, we've got to stand together. We have to know what's out there. And this is what I think we can task you folks to do for us if you could. And if you could possibly, I realize the American Legion isn't in this group for, again, technical reasons. Maybe if
let me just interrupt you. Mm-hmm. Officially, they're not, but they are.
Okay, fair enough. Good enough. Then serve as a conduit from those of us who are on the local level, who are up for making sandwiches rather than making committees, and get this damn thing done. Last night, at about 4:45, I got a call from the local parish priest at St. Augustine's, Father Jim. I got a homeless veteran. Okay, 4:45, I know, I've got nothing to do with this guy. I can't get him into a VA program, can't get him into a local program. Thank God the Legion's got a policy where I can take him, and did, to a local hotel, pay for his room for the night, and we'll deal with it in the morning. But aside from that, any authority I have, any clout the VA has, the county, the state, etc., it's coming close to 5 o'clock. It's bureaucracy. We can't help you. Sorry. And it's a sad commentary on what's out there. But again, if you folks could, and to underscore my point, again, I know I'm preaching to the choir in many instances. In New York last year in the city, we did this stand down, which I know is we've replicated it from things around the state. But the interesting part of that is although there were many, many fine agencies involved, and I have some more of these here, And the VA did a tremendous amount of work. I, you know, just can't thank them enough for all the hard work they do. Because once you get through that front door, you know, Ben Weisbrot was a head and shoulders above everyone down there in providing services. But the interesting thing about this poster is the lead agency in this is New York Vets, okay? New York Vets is a not-for-profit 501c3 that consists of myself, the lady sitting directly behind me, two t-shirts, a checkbook, and a hat, and whatever project we're working on at the time. But the reason why many of these fine agencies, state divisions, mayor's office, everybody else, didn't want to be the lead agency is, God forbid, somebody falls down and wants to sue us. But this little insignificant nothing agency managed to do it. So maybe if we can develop little insignificant not-for-profit agencies around the state who can put these types of programs together, direct the abilities and finances of the major people who can help us and are willing to, because we all know the VA is in dire straits and they are looking to up their headcount threefold. So if they can bring any of these people in, providing service to them or bringing service out to the community, which they're doing, they'll jump at the chance. But we have to give them the vehicle. We have to say, here we are. We don't care if somebody sues us. We don't care if we do it wrong. We don't care if it is just three hots and a cot. It's better than sleeping in the...